struts like John Wayne, resembles Jim Carrey, and dresses like he's visually impaired. Because he is. Insight. Insight with Mark Farrell on the Progressive Radio Network.
On the first full day of spring, this is Insight on the Progressive Radio Network. My name's Mark Farrell. How the heck are you? Well, it started out a beautiful day here in the Big Apple, and now the clouds are everywhere. That's okay. It's still March, you know. We had a really, really good warm stretch a couple days ago, and now it's feeling more like it should be. And that's okay. We don't want to rush spring, even though there's a lot of buds happening. Hopefully it smells and looks nice wherever you are. Yeah, I love the smells of spring, don't you? It's just kind of life-affirming that Mother Nature is coming out of her slumber. The birds, the buds, oh yeah. And of course the skirts. Did I say skirts? Okay. Well, it is New York City, and it's a walking city, so even though I'm visually impaired, I'm alive. Hey, speaking of visually impaired, you're going to meet Adam Lin, L-I-N-N. He's an amazing individual, and he has a show coming to Off-Broadway called Sped Kid, S-P-E-D Kid, Special Education Kid. Yes, you guessed it. Tells a story of losing his vision when he was 12 years old. Man, tough journey, huh? But there's a lot of humor, and there's a lot of great rock and roll in there as well. Sped Kid, you'll meet Adam in a few minutes right here on Insight. He's a New Yorker himself. Navigates the city, went to Harvard. What? Yeah, a blind guy went to Harvard. That sounds like a stand-up skit right there. I'm sure he can have a lot of fun with that. He's actually done the Moth Radio Hour with over 1 million downloads. This guy, Adam, has got it going on. Meet him here in a few minutes. So, you know, we're in the thick of March, the Ides of March. And are you like me? Are you looking around saying, hey, hello, can we put on the brakes for a second? Do we remember what happened 4 years ago? How come there's little in the media about this? I get it. You know, people, you know, lots and lots of lives were lost. But don't we need to reflect on that? I mean, we stop every year for 9/11. Of course, extremely different scenario. But lives were lost. So I'm confused why we keep this forward momentum and not pause for a second. It was such an anomaly to have something of this and multiple generations. And yet we're like, you know, keep going on. And we're like not paying it any mind. I saw something in a few different places. I'm surprised the president didn't make an address, even if it wasn't prime time, just about how far we've come, how resilient we are. You know, the old let's pump up the nation with positivity thing. And that's kind of a cool thing in my eyes. But here I am, Mark Farrell. And I like to pause because as a motivational speaker, as a radio guy, you know, I just wasn't able to connect with people for a while, just like most of us in the world. But I found a way, and I'd like to play you a few clips. The first one is, they're all actually about Governor Cuomo. Yes, I know, he fell from grace, but he made some great speeches. So out of my distress and need to connect with people, and more importantly, need to make people feel good and whole again, I came up with this concept to extrapolate his speeches, his press conferences that he would have all the time. And I edited them and put great riveting music, empowering music behind them. So take a listen to this one. Chances are you'll get some goosebumps.
We closed down everything, and then we told the essential workers, but you have to show up tomorrow. Even though this is a deadly virus, nurses, doctors, transit workers, police officers, we need you to go to work.
When you feel so tired but you can't sleep.
While everybody else can stay home and try to be safe. You know, there's still a right thing in life and gratitude and the essential workers we owe.
And I will try.
They made a tremendous sacrifice.
To fix you.
We owe them.
Yeah, so that's what I did. I was completely bored at nights during the pandemic, and I figured, what a great way. So what I did was I made a series of these, and I sent them out to radio stations in New York City, and a lot of people were like, huh? Why are you sending these to me? I'm like, listen, I'm a former creative services director for two New York City stations. I get it. It's unusual to receive something that's produced on the outside that you want to air on their station. But they could tag it, meaning they could make it their own, put their own call letters on it. And they're all like, no, thanks, we're good. I'm like, well, hold on a second. you're not good, because this isn't about me or you. This is about serving our listeners. This is what we need to do as a broadcast. This is our responsibility as a broadcaster, to share the goodness of what is transpiring and to lift our listeners up. So it did air on ESPN. It did air on, Hofstra University. It did air on WBLS. It aired on 4 or 5 New York City FM radio terrestrial stations. Here's another one.
When you see a healthcare worker on the way to work, when you see a grocer who's been working a double shift, when you see a pharmacist who's overwhelmed with the long lines, when you see a police officer, firefighter, say thank you.
Nothing compares.
Ask yourself,
nothing compares.
Would you do that? These are just extraordinary heroes.
Yeah. So that's an example. I made a whole series of these, and I felt that, again, it was my responsibility, out of frustration, desperation, to make people see what's happening through, I thought Cuomo's words were always empowering, and his manner was effervescent in a way that he was not going to give up. And yeah, I know. He did some wrong things, apparently. Well, who knows? But there it is. Here we are, middle of March, and I just thought it would be nice to kind of pump the brakes and take a look back at where we were and the unfortunate lives, you know, the hundreds of thousands of lives that we lost. You know, it's just a shame. And how I actually came up with another idea to provide music for isolating seniors. My mother was in a senior facility, and I put speakers on the top of my car and drove around with a generator and sung and danced while they were inside or standing on their balconies, because that's what I think life is about. We make our community a better place. And they were obviously afraid, like a lot of people, but they were seniors and not even be able to interact with other seniors. So that's what I did. So I just think there's so many things that people did, and memories, good, bad, indifferent, ugly, that, you know, we should kind of like pause. I was really, really hoping we were going to be a kinder, gentler, more empathetic nation. I've seen signs of it. But on the whole, look at what's going on around the world, on the globe. War after war. Threat of war after war. Trump not going away. People believing his lies. I mean, life is fleeting. I know it's a damn cliche, but it is the most accurate. Here we are in 2024. Blink of an eye, the pandemic's gone for the majority of the reason. Obviously, it's sustainable now. And we're just not even really paying much mind to it. But yet, we'll go to war. We'll do all these things not to really address the frailty of life and live it more in a humble sense, a more loving sense, in a more appreciative manner, instead of being filled with stress and anger and, you know, overcommitments and war. Oh, my God. Sorry, I keep going back to war. But I just can't believe that we haven't learned anything really from the pandemic. It's very frustrating, especially from a motivational speaker's point of view. All right, it's time to meet Adam. Great dude. You got to see the show and check out his website, adamlynn.com. That's L-I-N-N. And enjoy our conversation. Adam Lynn, what a pleasure to have you on the show. Welcome, my friend.
Oh, thank you, Mark. It's great to be here.
And congratulations on Sped Kid. People are like, Sped Kid, what is that? A new sneaker, a new technology, a new app?
Thank you so much. Or it's what kids who are going disabled, you know, becoming disabled in the 80s got called. And I think some disabled kids still get called that. So I'm taking the name back, Mark.
Yeah, well, that's a polite name if they're called Sped Kids now.
I don't know. I don't know. I don't think anyone likes to be labeled necessarily, but I was always called that, Mark. And I said, I'm not going to run from it anymore. I'm leaning into it because me and the other Sped kids, I've never had a better group of friends and, you know, quite frankly, tougher kids and, you know, kids that exactly. Came through more. So it's like, that's my band of brothers. I love the Sped kids.
How many years has this been in your Pentium, in your brain, and finally came out and came to fruition?
That is a hard question because, let's see, it happens in 1984.
When you're 12?
Yes, and a few minutes went by, and now it's 2024, so, you know.
Exactly.
Let's just say 5 years, 10 years, something
that
like
that.
Yeah,
works for me. Works for me.
It's unbelievable that it took me this long, Mark. I feel like, you know, Frank McCourt, I think he wrote Angela's Ashes, he was about 60, 65, and it's like, it flowed out of me a little bit like watermark. I can't even say it was difficult, and I'm thinking, why didn't this happen 20 years ago? But I needed the perspective.
It's fun.
It's because, you know, I'm blind, and I went completely blind when I was 12. So in the back of my mind, Mark, I'm a writer, I'm a satirist, a speaker. I've always been a blind guy, and thought about being blind. And I thought, actually, before I was blind, I was sped kid. I was with kids who were deaf, kids who were, you know, in wheelchairs, you name it. And I thought that was a very interesting time. Let me write about that. And I'm serious, Mark. I mean, it matter of weeks I wrote it, as opposed to stuff that I've, you know, slaved over for 3 years.
I think it was all about readiness.
Yes.
I mean, you're a father, and we're going to get into that. But take me to the Adam Lynn, sub 12 years old, the sighted Adam Lynn. What kind of life did you lead, and what kind of kid were you back then?
So I grew up in Boston in the 1980s. And in some ways, I felt like a really typical kid. I went to a little parochial school that was near my house. I lived with my grandparents. I was a little bit different, Mark, in that the neighborhood was very homogenous. It was a lot of big Irish Catholic families, whereas my mother had met my father over in Europe. He was from the Midwest. He was a Protestant. My parents are divorced. And so for that time, for then in that neighborhood, that was some wild stuff, Mark. People now can't believe it, that in my school, it was first grade through eighth grade, I was the only child and the only child of divorce in the entire school.
Though three quarters of them should have been divorced, you were the only one who had the courage to actually go through with it.
I think 10 years later, probably that was not the case. There were probably plenty of divorce. But at that time, it was the 1980s. But in many ways, my neighborhood was still the 1950s. I mean, a lot of the mothers stayed at home. I was lucky enough to live with my grandparents. So I used to come home for lunch and, you know, have my little hamburger on the table and watch Price is Right and I Love Lucy, and then trundle back up to school. So in many ways, it was idyllic. It was very nice. So
friends, sports.
Yeah, I certainly had friends in the neighborhood. I could never really play sport. I couldn't box, which a lot of kids, you know, used to box with the priest down in the veterans post. And I wanted to do that desperately, but I couldn't get hit in the face.
I think you were very fortunate to be away from the cloth at that age.
Yeah, well, the cloth and the boxing gloves, right? Well, that's a whole
other story. Be safer with the gloves, my friend.
I used to play basketball. We used to play street hockey, things like that. What I really loved was there was a huge abandoned lot near my house, and I used to go up there and we used to catch snakes. And where I grew up in Boston was the edge of town. It was almost like being in the Bronx, on the edge of the Bronx, maybe.
Is that
Queens.
Back Bay?
No. I grew up in Dorchester.
Oh, that's right. Much
yeah,
more
the other end of town. You know, Dorchester is the real deal, you know. It's the biggest neighborhood in Boston, the most diverse.
Tell me about when your life changed. 12 years old, things are humming along.
It wasn't quite like that. I mean, but my vision slowly started to go. I mean, it was definitely something that I was aware of. My mother was aware of. I could never wear glasses. It just didn't help the condition that I had. So outwardly, no one really knew that this was the situation I had. But then over the summer, my eyesight really started to go downhill, and I started to go. I mean, what I find so fascinating about Boston, I could grow up in a blue collar area that's like the 1950s, and you're a 20 minute subway ride away from Harvard and MIT, and a bunch of scientists from around the world with MRIs and lasers and huge computers in the 1980s. I mean, cutting edge stuff. So I got sent over there, as many people with eye problems can tell you. It's a very similar story. You know, it just became a hospital after hospital, doctor after doctor, visit after visit. And then you'd step back and be in your regular life. And it was very strange.
Sure. Talk about your first symptoms. What were they?
Yeah, just I talk about this a little bit in the play. Purple swirls is what I call them, floaters.
Isn't that called acid tripping?
Well, maybe if you were talking about a college story, we're still talking about junior high here, Mark. So yeah, I hadn't tried that yet. I had these little floaters that were floating around, and that was, and that, and I just stop being able to see the chalkboard. And I don't even know if you remember this, Mark, the boards back then, they don't even use chalkboards, I don't think, anymore. They were green instead of black.
Yeah.
And I couldn't see the white chalk on the green board in the little parochial school. And they kept moving my desk closer and closer and closer to the board until finally.
So you were sharing this with people, obviously, if you're getting your desk moved.
Oh, yeah. Oh, at that point, then it became obvious. And then fairly quickly, my mother at the time was very nervous about sending me to a public school across town, because that was the height of the busing problem. I mean, the violence in the city and the segregation, I mean, it's all, very well known. But I really had no choice. And so I went to school, gosh, I think, maybe 4 or 6 weeks, something like that. And then boom, I switched over to public school, and it was like Dorothy and the Wizard of Oz. I went from this black and white world to a multicolor, multicultural, gigantic public school that really opened my eyes to so many different people.
Sure.
It was unbelievable.
Adam, that must have been daunting, because I'm sure they didn't have any transitional specialists back then or anything of that caliber. And so you were diagnosed with, and you're going to share this, and did they say, okay, pat you on the back and say good luck?
The doctors?
Yes.
I think we get there. Yeah. I mean, yeah, so essentially, I mean, Boston, like New York, is a big city, and it's not as if I've met people who grew up in rural Texas. Now they have nothing. So yeah, I was fortunate in that they had a resource room for visually impaired kids, and they had, early computers and Kurzweil machines and stuff, that were there for me. Itinerant teacher, kind of a spoiler alert. Obviously I lose my sight at some point in my life.
Oh, Jesus Christ. Well, thanks for coming on the show, Adam. Our next guest is going to be.
Exactly. But yeah, but before we get there, I'm sorry, Mark, I kind of rambled.
Oh no, I'm busting. I'm busting totally.
Yeah. But yeah, no, I think you were asking if the doctors were, there
yeah,
you go.
I mean,
your way.
Was it parochial school? Like, we think you're going to be better off in a public school setting.
Oh, I mean, the parochial school, and I was young, Mark, so I don't remember the real politics
of
everything.
Yeah,
but they were not cool. And I have to say, and I don't mean to punch the church while it's down, but I was really into the choir, and I did, I was a choir boy, and I liked to sing and all this stuff. And as soon as I went to public school, I thought I could continue doing the choir. And they're like, no way. we're not going to allow some kid who doesn't wear a uniform around our school. It was very, I have to say it was quite dramatic. I mean, it was, literally a small, tight-knit community. All my friends lived, within a block or two of my house. And the second I went to public school with a bunch of kids from all over the city, which is a way of saying black kids, Asian kids, Spanish kids. I stopped.
I mean, that must have rocked your world. I mean, everything that you know in, day out, all your network of buddies and friends is poof, gone.
Gone. And they were starting to go anywhere, because as my sight was going, I couldn't shoot, I couldn't play basketball. I stopped being able to play Nintendo and Atari. It was getting a little bit, 12-year-old boys in those days, I think they'd be better now, weren't into letting someone hold their arm for help. I mean, that back in those days, Mark, 18-year-old guys were weird about letting you hold their arm for help. I think people have become much healthier in that regard. I tell people, and I kind of mean this, I don't think I hugged a man until I was 26, Mark. That became popular. I'm going to hug my bro.
And then you never stopped.
No, never stopped. I'm a recovering New Englander. I love hugs.
I'm sending you a virtual hug right now, Adam.
Nice. I love it, Mark.
All
I'm feeling
good.
The warmth.
From one Irishman to another.
Exactly. An Irish hug, Mark. That might be a kick in the stomach.
Exactly. I like that. Makes a good t-shirt. So
I love that guy, Mark. I kicked him in the back.
Who had an easier time with this, you or your parents?
Oh, definitely me.
Yeah.
Definitely me. I mean, because my dad wasn't around. He wasn't in the picture, but my mom, I'm not kidding, Mark. And my mom will be in the show in the front. She bought ticket number 1A.
Oh, great.
The tickets hadn't even really gone live. And my mother knows nothing about computers. And she's like, wait, the tickets might be online. I said, yes, ma'am. She's like, hang on. Click, 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 click. Oh, I see them. Bro, okay. Bye-bye.
Wow. Good for her.
Yeah, it was amazing.
Proud mama.
Very proud. And, Mark, I'm like a little, I can't think about it too much, because I think just hearing this stuff and going over this stuff, oh, I know it was extremely difficult for her. I mean,
sure.
I was Yeah, it's amazing how flexible kids are. You know, I literally got on that bus going to public school. I met the kids. We did become friends the first day. Whereas my mother would sit there and see the kids riding their bikes out the window for years and think, oh, my son can't do that. And it shattered her. Whereas the thing I want to show in my piece, I mean, because my piece has a lot of humor, a lot of energy. You're a kid, you don't live a tragedy. I mean, you know, it's shitty to go to the hospital. It's bad to go to doctors. But at the same time, you're on your phone with your new friends, you know, talking about music, talking about girls, whatever.
Yeah, it's a different world. Well, are you talking about then and now?
Right. And I think adults, you know what it is. Adults, like my mother, was probably very worried. And I know it was very worried. You're worried about the future. No, he's 12 now. What's it going to be when he's 22, 32, 42? Exactly. And she's picturing the worst. You know, what does she know about blind people? She's never really known anyone blind. You know, she just has, you know, prejudice in her mind. And isn't really thinking, oh, he's going to grow up, move to New York, have kids.
You know, she had no idea how resilient you would be.
Well, and I got it from her. She's quite tough.
True. But, yeah. When you have a disability, you don't have a day off.
Exactly.
I mean, you have to advocate for yourself. It's a whole list of things that you have to fight for in life daily.
And early on, of course, she had to do a lot of that fighting. Sure. A lot of that comes out in the writing in my play, where I felt like, how many scenes do I have a reference to my mother making a phone call and fighting with someone on my behalf? I'm like, that happens a lot. And that's why, I mean, so many parents of special needs kids are already getting in touch with me. And these are like old high school friends and stuff. And I said, oh, it's so great that you're interested in the play. And they're like, we have two kids on the spectrum. We know.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, it's a lot of work to get in, a lot of fighting to just get evened up, to get an education. It's amazing.
So the social ramifications were one major variable and aspect of the transition into public school. Talk about personally, did you go through, for what lack of a better word that you could term, depression back then? Or were you just so young and astute and like, okay, this is the new me and I'm going to make it work? And did you have to learn to read Braille at a certain age, or how deep into public school? And just tell me about how you had to adapt to being independent, in a whole new fashion.
Yeah, I mean, looking back on it, depression. I mean, depression looks different for a kid. I mean, and as we talked about, Irishman. I enjoy turning my sadness into anger.
Or humor, right?
Yeah, or humor. Yeah, I've gotten better at that. People used to say, oh, learn to laugh at yourself. Well, that's hard when you're 12 and you just went blind, right? I'm like, there are plenty of kids mom laughing at me already. Don't worry. Yeah. There's no shortage of that.
We need to contribute.
But yeah, I mean, of course, what I cover in the play is, up to the, I don't get into the Braille and everything. It's just starting to touch on, first things first, you need to learn to use a cane, things like that. You need to get around safely. And a resistance. I don't know about you, Mark, but it's like, Braille is, I love Braille. It's super necessary. It helps me every day. It's also extremely challenging and I read it slowly. I wish I could read 200 words a minute. I can't. Yeah. So there was always an element of resistance there. People didn't say, here's a cane, here's some Braille. And I didn't say, yay.
But meanwhile, you're highly educated and very successful.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I did go to Harvard. So yeah, that's good branding.
Ding, right? Ding.
And it's funny, Mark. It's so much about context. I grew up in Boston and Harvard was in the air. I mean, apparently, I don't remember this, but there's a family story where my great aunt, at one point, gave me $5 and a birthday card, said, save that money for college. You need to go to college someday. And I said, I'm not going to college. I'm going to Harvard. So, I mean, who knows why? I had neighbors, like older people, World War II vets. They had come back from, used the GI Bill, went to Harvard, went to MIT. So I think it's so... What I really want to get into in my play is, I think people have this image of Boston as, it's a bunch of drunk Irish guys fighting in the snow. It was so different, my experience.
Well, that's really not that true. That's not fair. You haven't had a lot of snow in the last 2 years.
That's true. So now it's, Irish guys fighting in the rain with funny accents.
I don't know about that. I think, there's so many cultural aspects and political aspects and names and landmark institutions. I think maybe in the 80s back then, but I mean, right. I think Boston's got a great reputation.
Well, thank you so much, Mark. It's funny because in New York, people are, you know, quick to pigeonhole.
Because that's the capital of the world. You know, I have a sister and brother-in-law lived in Boston for the last 40 years, which I failed to mention to you last time we spoke. It's a beautiful city. I love it. Every time I get there, I leave my car and I walk for miles and go see MIT and walk along the water and through the different neighborhoods and the seaport. It's beautiful.
Now, I am going to have to point out to you that MIT is in Cambridge, but yes, aside
but
from that.
But you can see it across the water.
That is true. Well, I can't because I'm blind. But
So one quick thing. Did you ever think of naming your play Sped Kid Harvard or something like that?
Well,
that would have been a nice twist.
It's funny, and it's maybe why it took me so long to write this play, because this play is as far from Harvard as you can get. My mother is saying, like, how come you don't mention Harvard? I said, because it's really only about 1 year of my life in the sixth grade when I went to public school.
Sure.
And very different story. I could tell a story about being at Harvard, and there, you know, out of 6,000 students, I think there were three blind students spread over the 4 years.
That you were told of.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, just a very different experience, you know, being in the seat of wealth and power as opposed to like a huge, you know, public school in Boston. And quite frankly, the energy, the humor, the love at the public school were overwhelming. At Harvard, it was, you know, very cold March. Cold, the wind off the Charles is cold, and occasionally the reception from the professors can be cold. So that'll be a different story. That's a future installment.
Yes. Well, as someone with a visual impairment who had to go to the professors before and after each new semester would start, yes, you would feel that coldness. And the one question I always got was, you're not blind, are you? And that's how the conversation would go. And I felt like saying, oh, I guess you don't possess a higher degree either, do you?
Well, now that, because I'm totally blind, so I didn't get
correct.
I didn't get that question, but I would get the question of never hostility, usually not hostility, but just nervousness on their part. And this overwhelming sense that they wished I wasn't there.
you could require extra work.
Yeah, and just, yeah, different style. Mm-hmm. I mean, there were a few, I mean, I had some great teachers, don't get me wrong. A couple, but a lot just thought, man, I wish he was doing, like, I did economics because I needed to make some money to pay off the loans and everything. And they were like, don't you want to do, like, social work or something like that?
Yeah, throw the sped kid in the pity field.
Exactly. Exactly. So... Then he wouldn't mind. I took this easy sociology class and I almost flunked it because it was inaccessible. So I thought, man, I better go back to the harder classes.
Yeah, no kidding. No kidding. Talk to me about vernacular, special education, special needs, disabled, special abilities. Where do you stand in that world?
That's a great question, Mark. And I have to say, in some ways, I've been lucky. I mean, you know, losing my sight entirely, I could just say blind and stick with that. And so I never really had to, you know, worry about these more nuanced descriptions. Mm. But what I love about Sped Kid is that I'm just one character, and there are some characters who are visually impaired and also, you know, in wheelchairs and have other, developmental disabilities. I just think disabled, I guess. I mean,
special needs.
Special needs. I mean,
it goes on and on.
It goes on and on.
It
Mark.
Does.
So, coming out of, you know, someone's mouth who's well-intended, it all sounds pretty good. Someone who's an asshole. Sorry, can I say that?
Correct. Oh, I 1000% agree. I get this a lot because I speak to a lot of different organizations and groups and populations with singular disabilities, multiple disabilities. And sometimes I get often in the blind community, why don't you say that you're blind? And so you have to kind of, you know, tread carefully, because I don't want to get up on a stage and people will be like, oh, he's not blind, but he calls himself blind. So you have to be cognizant of the able-bodied audience as well. So you have to walk a fine line, because I don't consider myself blind because I can navigate without any aids and devices.
Well, now it's funny you should say that, Mark, because, you know, someone recently said to me, like, hey, you know, there's a lot of, like, blind, you know, comedians, speakers and stuff. How have you broken through? Like, how is it that you're on the Moth and you have a million downloads of your stuff? And I was thinking, like, what is different about my stuff? And I realized, and I said it kind of as a joke, but then it's serious. I said, I talk to sighted people the way I would blind people. I just let them in on my thing. I don't speak to them any differently. And I think, you know, set of people like that.
Correct. Correct.
That's not your shtick either. Right. In a roundabout way, I don't really have a great answer for your question, Mark. But again, I take it from the source.
So Sped Kid, the show.
Yes.
Has come to fruition. One show only right now. People can go on spedkidtheshow.com for tickets. Sped, S-P-E-D, kidtheshow.com for tickets.
Yeah, no spaces, right?
And you're obviously counting on this to be a hands-down success, and you're looking for an extended run, I imagine.
So I'm an optimist, I have to say. Yeah, so, I mean, literally, we are 3 tickets away from a sellout. Now, a sellout doesn't mean every ticket is sold, but at the theater, you know, 70 seats is considered a sellout. So there will be additional dates. I don't have those dates right now, but obviously the debut Friday night, it's going to be an exciting show. So I hope people jump on and get these tickets. Now, there will be other dates. And of course, I mean, this is, you don't do all this work, Mark, and say, well, that's it. You know, I'm done. Well, I mean, some people do.
Oh, that worked. I got a cool T-shirt, by the way. I love your T-shirt. It says
thank
Spank
you.
Kid.
Thank you so much. I got to get you some swag.
Yes, I would love some swag.
So this summer I'm going to be over in Edinburgh. So I'll do the play at the Edinburgh Fringe.
Is that in Jersey, Edinburgh? It's by Teterboro, right?
Then I'll come back. And I mean, the piece is very Boston oriented. I'd love to do a Boston run and then come and do it at a theater in New York.
So from
my mouth to God's ears to Mark's ears to, you know, it's like, yes, I think the show is very good, Mark. And I think it's very topical. And
I'm sure it is. You're witty, you're humorous, you're insightful. I mean, you got a lot of great accolades on your belt. You've written a novel, American Sexy. You're a contributor to the New York Times. Ding, ding. NPR contributor to The Moth. I mean, what a great, great show, by the way. I've had these people on. I had The Moth on my show, by the way, 20 years ago, way before anyone knew who The Moth were. So I'm very, very proud about that accomplishment because I heard about this organization. I went to them and saw one of their shows. I'm like, oh, my God, this is a great platform that people need to know about. Tell us quickly, because people need to learn a little bit more about your trajectory, if you can, in about 30, 45 seconds, after Harvard until you got here.
Right after Harvard, I did the very typical, well, I did something atypical, which is I went to Louisiana, to the National Federation, the Louisiana Center for the Blind. And that was a fantastic experience. And really, if nothing else, in 1 second, I'll just say I came out with a lot of confidence.
Well worth it. That's, you know.
Yes, I came out really feeling like a free, spirited adult ready to attack the world. And I became an options trader out on the West Coast. I worked for Charles Schwab. It was, amazing work. I really enjoyed it. Very high pressure.
How was technology back then for you in terms of being able to access in a high pressure environment with your lack of sight?
It was pretty good. It was 2000. I had an excellent Braille display. I had an 80 cell Braille display, and I was using a small, a Braille light, which was a handheld. So in terms of that technology, I was doing okay. There was where I would run into problems is they would do security updates every week on the internally. And yeah, I'd get there Monday morning and I could never turn my computer on.
Yeah.
So
I'm sorry to cut you off there, mm-hmm. Adam. That's a very interesting field choice because that field is known for many, many things. Sensitivity. Right?
Mark, I'm a tough kid from Boston. I didn't think
you
I needed
are.
Sensitivity.
Yes.
I like sensitivity now. I appreciate it.
Yeah.
But it's funny when I was picking colleges, my mother said to me, oh, like the Harvard, they'll give you nothing. They will never be nice to you. They'll teach you how the real world is. Go there. And she's not wrong. She's not wrong.
Good for mom. Yeah.
I mean, yes. In life, it's good to be expect a little bit of
you
a
You can't
fight
be sheltered, able-bodied or not.
Well, you can be, but you're not going to get anywhere.
Exactly.
So then I did that for a while. And at some point I said, okay, this is cool. I'm really glad I did it. It was nice having some money in my bank account. But I said, I ended up moving to New York. I got a role in a movie that ended up at Cannes. And I said, I love this.
So was that serendipitous? Did you have a friend who said, listen, we need a blind guy in a movie? How did this come to fruition?
The director was in New York and she was looking for people and people knew that I, because I was already writing screenplays and
acting.
Oh,
you were? Okay.
Yes. Yeah. I was, you know, kind of in after work, you know, not really fully committed to it. But yeah, I ended up auditioning for her on the phone, got a small part. And she said, "You're going to come all the way to New York to do this?" I said, "I sure am." And we're shooting during 9/11. We started shooting like, you know, September 6th. It was the craziest thing, Mark. But I came to New York.
So you were hooked
at
that point on?
Oh, hooked. I mean, love. I thought, you know, any one of these people probably could have gone to law school, probably could have gone to medical school. Instead, they're spending their life making films, acting, writing. And I just got bitten by the bug.
Adam Lin, compare the rush and thrill of being on a movie set to making an amazing trade.
Again,
is it comparable or no?
No. I mean, yeah, you do great work and make a movie and it's still there. All the times I bought and sold Amazon that I haven't owned in for over 20 years is long gone. Eating bread is soon forgotten, Mark.
Yes. Yes, indeed.
Lost stocks are soon forgotten.
So there you are. Was your mother excited or was she like, okay, Harvard degree for what? Acting?
Yeah, that's a good, well, it's funny, Mark, how parents get what they want in a way. My mother's a librarian, very literary. She's been studying at Harvard for 14 years, Joyce and Kafka. So, you know, while no one sneezes at money, she really has an admiration for the arts and always kind of wanted me to be a poet, you know, to be something I wasn't. In college, I was more of a, you know, guy who rode crew and drank beer. And she was like, "Don't you have any sensitive friends?" So that was
Yes, I have gay friends, Mom.
Yes. And I think she liked me. I have many. I mean, I have to say, being a disabled artist and being a gay artist
in New York City, no less.
I've seen so many parallels because there are so few. I mean, there aren't a lot of blind filmmakers. In fact, I've never met any, at least when I first started off. But I could listen to John Waters, who I in a fluke met one time, and how he embraced doing his own thing. And I thought, that's who I want to be. You know, I'm not gay, but I'm the other. I'm a marginalized person who wants to have my voice out there. And so.
And there's still time. You could, you know, you could still become gay. Aim for the stars, my friend.
My wife is very attached to me, Mark. I don't know why, but she is. So
can't blame her. Can't blame her.
Exactly. But so that was the, so you were asking about the trajectory. Yeah. So, you know, I hit 30 and decided I needed to do a reboot, become a screenwriter, a writer, an artist. I moved to New York. I discovered at the time Theater by the Blind, which is now Theater Breaking Through Barriers. And I've been doing that work ever since.
What gives you the most joy in life? In the arts?
In the arts. Good thing, because I have to say my children, Mark.
Yeah, of course. How could they not?
Yeah. What gives me the most pain and the most joy, which is, you know, an interesting question. I love performing live, I have to say, which is funny because I started as a screenwriter. And it's amazing when you do a film and you're sitting at a festival and watching a film you made a year and a half earlier. It feels, you're so detached in a way. You're like, did I make this film? Who made this film? I really like writing pieces and delivering them on stage. I love it. I love hearing people laugh. I mean, it's a drug to me. I got sober 20 years ago, or something. So my drug is getting on stage, and you know, you want people to cry, you want people to sigh, and to hear the love. But really, I do love laughter.
There's nothing like it.
I mean, to know that you can't fake it.
No impact in someone's life is palpable. You don't need vision.
No, and. You're never going to leave my show and just be like, "Oh, what a jerk! I laughed. I laughed the whole time. It wasn't that good." You know, it's like, and you know, if I made you laugh, I know I touched you somehow. You might not even want to admit it, but I'm thinking, well, he did laugh, so something got him.
What's the running time of Sped Kid?
60 minutes.
So, and how did you find your producer? Was it an easy sell?
Specifically. Right now, it's being produced essentially by me. I have a wonderful director who is acting in many ways like a producer in terms of setting up the stage manager, the lighting, the sound. Patrick Lillis, who is a veteran in theater. I mean, he's so sophisticated that I think at times he's looking at me like, you know, come on, guy.
Get it together.
Give me a little Laurence Olivier. You know, who is this roughneck kid from Boston? But yeah, so yeah, Patrick has been, you know, instrumental in it making this a professional endeavor.
And how is the ramping up, Ben? Has this been obviously multiple months in terms of working together? He's telling you what works, what doesn't work, what you need to improve on, what is aces, et cetera.
Oh, we started working together last summer.
Mm.
And wow. We ran the show last September, a very small audience. I mean, there were about six of us in a small art space just to get a feel for it. And then he was very busy and, you know, traveling around doing plays and movies and stuff all around the country. And I had, you know, I got into this festival. So we put it on, not on ice, but it was really the last 2 months that we've started coming together, a week here, a week there, where we just had, you know, strong rehearsals. Now we have the sound and the lights on board. And next week we're going to be, you know, loading into an art space where we can, you know, simulate being in the theater.
That's phenomenal. Good for you.
Oh, thank you so much. I mean, it's been a long time coming, but it feels so right, Mark. I mean, the energy is there. The people are yeah. You know, someone blind watches it, you know, someone disabled watches it, and it mirrors their childhood. I mean, people ask me, I say, Sped Kid is for anyone who's ever felt a little bit different, who wants a place to fit in. You know, describe all of us in some ways, right? Mm, disabled or
certainly.
Not.
When you are on stage, when you're acting,
mm-hmm.
or performing for the Moth,
mm-hmm.
can you see? Do you have a disability, or you are on a higher plane?
It's funny. Certainly speaking, I can see because, and I'm gonna. Is it all right if I brag a little bit here, Mark?
Please,
because
the show is about you, my friend.
I think famously, especially with the Moth, I started doing smaller venues, and it's like a pyramid. You get to keep coming back if you do well. And I performed at Lincoln Center, definitely my best story. Dinner at Wonder right. Woman, where I was smart enough to write a love story about my wife. And as awkward as this Irishman is to talk about love, I just laid it all out there. And that was brave for me. And she loves it. And the audience loved it.
Wow.
There were maybe 1,200 people there. And it was like a sea of voices and breathing and laughter that I could feel rippling from my left to my right, from my right to my left, from the front
Fantastic.
To the back.
Mm.
Yeah. And it was like a glowing network. Yeah, I could see it.
Fantastic. You must have skated for a month after that show.
A month? I'm still flying. You know,
good for you.
You moved to New York and then you're performing at Lincoln Center. I'm like, yeah. Hey, that's not bad. Hey, this kid's making it.
You know, you don't need to be Sigmund Freud to know that I've done many things in my life, not for me, for my true desire. It was more about proving to other people that I am whole. I can do a triathlon. I can do marathons. I can ride a bike 60 miles down a hill. I can hang glide, I can skydive, and on and on and on. And then it dawned on me probably 20 years ago that it's more about what I can say I've done. In the meantime, I've really learned and loved to do those things. So now it's become more, yeah, well, I really like to do these things. But at first, it was a proving ground. What was your proving ground?
When I was a kid, you mean? Like,
you tell me.
It's you asked me, and I can touch back to an earlier question a little bit. So when I went blind, in a way, it was very isolating because I was the only blind person in my family. We didn't know anyone blind. But the good thing was, so I love sailing. I was always, local, we had a community boating thing. So when we got a windsurfer, I was like, yeah, I'll jump on that. This was 85. So I used to windsurf all over Boston Harbor. And I recently looked online and they were talking about, blind windsurfer began in 2011. I'm thinking, well, I think I got you beat by 25 years.
Yeah.
Right? I used to ski a lot before blind skiing became a thing. So there was no orange vest. There was no helmet. I just had these cheap Radio Shack headphones and a great skier from New Hampshire used to ski backwards and say, hard left, hard right, hard left.
That's great.
And I loved it because you're a kid and just testosterone,
fearless. Sure.
Tons of energy. But yeah, later in life when I, had to cross the street, when I had to move to New York and get on the subway and go to a rehearsal, which quite frankly is scarier than windsurfing or skiing, but I had that in my back pocket. It's like, okay, I've done some things. Now, I would not jump out of a plane. If you've actually skydived, we'll talk about that later, Marco. Like, I think you got me beat there. You know, I'm a brave guy, but I think falling out of an airplane, I think I draw the line there.
How did alcohol serve in your life?
Oh my God, my first love, my great love, and like I said, I grew up in an Irish neighborhood that didn't have a lot of, you know, transition specialists, mm-hmm. and a lot of talking. So it's astonishing looking back how much self-medicating there was that, you know, in the guise of having a great time. Yeah. So I, especially in college, one of the only blind people, very fearful. And I definitely, you know, I was in a club in school that was like a frat. And certainly I would drink alcohol as a way to kind of tamp down the anxiety that being the only blind person felt.
Sure. And fit in as well.
Oh, of course.
Yeah.
You know, fit in because, yeah, I couldn't play baseball, couldn't, you know, play basketball, whatever. But yeah, I could certainly do a keg stand.
I'm raising my hand. I'm right there with you.
Yeah. And it just, I mean, again, I people think I'm kidding. I say it's better to be fully blind than have a little bit of sight and be tentative and be worried about getting, you know, losing that sight and being as, you know, addicted and as defeated by alcohol as I was when I turned 30. I just said, okay, I can't do this anymore. I mean,
good for you. What was your wake up call?
The thing had been kicking my ass for years there. I didn't have a specific, you know, one moment that like, okay, now that's going to do it. But I mean, a million, you know, trips to Mardi Gras and blackouts and things, you know, it just,
yeah,
you know,
takes its toll.
And acting in a way that it's not me. I think I'm genuinely a pretty nice guy and I really like people and I want to be helpful. So yeah, blunting my spirit. I didn't like that feeling.
For me, it was the realization that my brother had died by suicide, who also struggled with alcohol, nearing the age of 40, a couple years away, being single and fearing a life of my brother. And then a small little family intervention. I'm like, okay, let me clean up my act here.
I had a girlfriend at the time, and I, because you said single, I knew I wanted to get married, have kids. That was some part of, you know, something I wanted to experience. And I thought if I stay, you know, an eternal frat boy, I might miss that train.
Yes, exactly. Well, you're a dad. I mean, you're an amazing father, and clearly you've worked through, you know, much of your dad fears. Please share your fear of being a father and how it began when you were young.
Oh, not even being young. I was always, because I have a genetic condition. I have, you know, what I have is this a disease called VHL. And let me get this right or I'll have a geneticist calling me up. it's dominant. So any child I have is a 50-50 of having this disease.
And you have two children, correct?
Correct. So I flipped the coin twice.
Both healthy. Wow.
And I'll be honest with you. Having a blind kid would be no problem. I think I'd be a great dad with a blind kid. I mean, a cane, braille, you name it. But my condition, some people are so racked with tumors that they die when they're 3 or 4 years old. And, you know, I have a titanium rod in my spine. I've had, you know, six brain tumors. I mean,
Now you're bragging. You asked me if you could brag before. Now this is the real bragging.
Well,
section.
Yeah, this was more or less. Yeah, this was more or less. Hey, I had good doctors, I guess, right? Because, you know, I woke up, I could move. That was good. I could go to rehab, you know, get better. So that's what I really was afraid to have a kid, you know, with that kind of a thing.
But so, also yeah. Your father, you didn't know your father
right
really well. And that scared you because...
scared me entirely because I didn't want to be like him. So yeah, I had many, many fears. So I think that's probably why I didn't have kids until I was, you know, 39 and 41. And it is funny that I have this genetic condition and I, you know, on my first date with my wife, who was a doctor, I had to tell her I have VHL. And she's like, that's a dominant genetic condition. I'm like, this is sexy talk. All right.
Yes. Waitress, we'll take another round.
Clearly. Wait, I'm sober too. I'll have another seltzer.
I'm getting more attractive as the seltzers go by here.
Right. And I don't know if you found this, not drink. The funny thing is, yeah, not drinking early is a magnet for women and men. It's like, oh, I like this guy's quiet strength.
Well, luckily I went to the precipice, so I'm actually able to still have because I was able to pull back in time.
Nice.
And I spent so much time in Alcoholics Anonymous because my father was an alcoholic and used to run meetings. And so I actually went to several meetings during college and after college when I lived in the city. And I would profess why I was there because, you know, you really need to be a member of the community.
Right.
And I said, listen, I don't need to be a voyeur, but I'm afraid that if I continue on this path, I will be with you in good company. Not that there's anything wrong with you, but if I had the option of not being here. Anyway, so do tell me about your father very quickly. If you could write a few lines to him, what are the first lines be to your dad now, looking back and who you are, the man you've become as a father, a husband, and the accomplished professional?
Yeah, and unfortunately, he passed in 2006, because I always thought, oh, you know, I'm definitely open to reconciliation. I think that's always better than a closed door.
Good for you.
It's funny. I'll talk about him in a minute. And he became later in his life. He was a photographer. He became very accomplished. He became an artist in residence at the Herbert Hoover Library in Iowa, where he's from. So I think that, you know, and I become a blind filmmaker. So there's something there.
That?
Yeah. So I think that my mother doesn't talk about him a lot, but I think that he was not a bad person. He was a free spirit. He was Scotch Irish all the way. Couldn't follow rules. Army climbing fences. You know, AWOL, just could not go do a 9-to-5, did his own thing, marched to his own drummer. And so as a kid, and that's your father, that's not the greatest thing. As an adult looking back, you can appreciate someone who isn't broken by society, who's creative, who has ideas. So I'd say, look, Dad, I appreciate the things you gave me, and I love you, and, you know, see you in heaven. I don't know.
It would have been nice if you had a little bit more time, possibly. Had he met your children?
No. My kids were born years after.
Okay.
He died 2006. My first child was born in 2011. And it's funny. He died like a year before Facebook, because I'm actually his brother, who's a very interesting character, a veterinarian who travels the world. Like a missionary, you know, doing working in Turkey, Honduras, helping animals.
Family dynamics.
So it's like, I've met cousins. I have a cousin who actually bought a ticket to Sped Kid, and she said, I'm going to try and make it from California.
How about that?
I got to figure out how to do it. So this could be quite a family reunion, and you know, it's very great.
That and so much more. SpedKidTheShow.com for tickets. SpedKidTheShow.com. Adam Lynn, LINN is his website. It is AdamLynn.com. AdamLynn.com. Adam, a real pleasure. I'm just thrilled that, speaking of Facebook, somehow we were connected. We don't even remember how. I even had your phone number, which is even more embarrassing.
Well, Mark, you know, you say you're okay. Like, how many glasses of wine did you have when we
exactly.
met?
Exactly. Clearly not
so
enough.
Well. You know, I mean, you know, you kissed me. You told me you loved me.
Yeah,
what happened
God.
With that, Mark?
Yeah, I'm a modern man. Renaissance man and a modern man. But clearly, successful. And mostly, I'm happy that you're happy.
Mark, I'm happy to meet people like you. This was so amazing, so serendipitous. You reached out to me, and literally, we talked on the phone for 5 minutes. I said, oh, man, this guy and I think we see eye to eye. And that's what I love about this work. I love creative people, smart people. And God, let's sell some shows and let's entertain.
And come see the show of a 12-year-old Adam, who really just is a resilient juggernaut, who does so much with his life and has created this play called Sped Kid, Theater Row, 42nd Street, New York City. Great guy, great conversation. He has certainly conquered much in his life. Hats off to Adam, and hats off to you, because every day, man, there's a lot of struggles that we all have, disabled or not. I mean, life is tough, life is growing, but thankfully, there are so many great things, like good people, like you, for listening to the Progressive Radio Network. We greatly appreciate that and your time and sharing it with your friends and family. The archive page, if you ever want to hear this show or any of the Insight shows, check out my Insight page right here on prn.live. Just go to shows and you'll be able to find it. My name is Mark Farrell. Enjoy the first full day of spring, my friends. Oh, by the way, Dairy Queen used to give you free ice cream on the first day of spring, and that has changed, kind of. You buy one cone, you'll get the other one free. So, hey, I get it in this economy. Hey, take your free ice cream however you can get it. My name's Mark Farrell. Keep living and laughing.
Insight with Mark Farrell. Check out this and all Insight shows on the Insight page at PRN.FM. PRN.FM. Have Mark speak at your company, your kid's school or college. Mark speaks on critical topics that affect kids and adults everywhere, from anti-bullying, mental health, drugs, and alcohol to overcoming adversity. Visit MarkFarrellMotivation.com for more info. Insight, Thursday mornings at 11 on the Progressive Radio Network.